Heb je wel eens geprobeerd te mediteren? Of zou je het een keer willen proberen? Of misschien heb je het net als ik, ja, echt wel eens regelmatig gedaan, maar ben je er even uit? Ik heb iets voor je. Vooral voor mezelf, maar doe mee, want de kracht van samen mediteren, dat is te gek. Ik heb de maand mei omgedoopt tot meditatie. Ja, sorry. En om nog erger te maken is het eigenlijk meditatien. Want 10 dagen lang, van 1 tot 10 mei, gaan we elke ochtend en elke avond samen even inchecken. Gewoon, thuis, online, maar dan wel begeleid door de grootste coaches op dit gebied. Denk aan Michael Pilacic, hè, van de Meditation Moments app. Ook ademexperts als Koen de Jong en Casper van der Meulen met zijn handpan, lekker. Jan Geurts, even die doktzen, traditionele manier. En we maken een transcendente reis met Marieke van Meijeren. Swami Purnachatanya is erbij, Robert Bridgman, Jesse Jazz, Faya Laurens, Hielke Bonema en Marjolein van der Aar van Mindful Minute. Roy Martina, Marjolein Rode, ja, ik kan ze niet allemaal noemen. Ik kan ze echt niet allemaal noemen, maar het zijn er veel. Willem Glaudemans wil ik toch nog even noemen. Oh, daar heb ik wel een paar keer meditatie met het cursusboek van meegemaakt. Fantastisch. Tijn Tauber, Edwin Selei, Wouter de Jong, nu ga ik ze toch allemaal noemen. Merel Teunis, nou ja. Robert Bridgman. Ja, nou goed. Check het. Via koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Daar kan je jezelf ook aanmelden. En het mooie is, het is helemaal gratis om live mee te kijken. Dat wordt echt power. Ik hoop dat je erbij bent. Het is echt makkelijker dan ooit. Gewoon je e-mailadres achterlaten via koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Doe het nu. Voordat je de podcast gaat luisteren, ga naar koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Het is een bijzondere aflevering van Koekeroe, want ik zit niet gewoon lekker aan mijn eettafel. Ik zit hier met een prachtig uitzicht in Amsterdam, waar de Biohacker Summit aan de gang is. En de keynote speech is zojuist gehouden door een man. Hij is eigenlijk net het podium af. Het is een hele bijzondere gast. En hij maakt even tijd om hier te zitten. Timo Arena, it's an honor to have you here. And,
my pleasure.
Yeah. So this was a great speech because this podcast is called Koekeroe, and it's about the guru is inside you, and you had a speech about don't trust gurus, trust yourself.
Yeah. And don't even trust that one, because that aspect might be a fake version of yourself that you created and invented yourself.
Yeah. But that's the whole thing. Isn't it always like you were talking about the ego and the narrative identity? But isn't that always narrative?
Yeah, it's... when it comes to the narrative identity, we tell a story about our achievements, about our hardships in life, who we are. And that process starts already in early childhood. And it often skips certain parts, right? You kind of like push those under the carpet. We could like describe those also as part of your shadow. You don't like identify with some aspects that are actually a real part of your life, which is often partly traumatic. Like, I don't believe there is anyone who has no traumas.
No, exactly.
If you believe that you don't have any traumas, you probably
have
are
a big
ignorant.
One.
You have a really big one. And you have a coping mechanism through which you are trying to avoid like facing the truth. And sometimes, you know, traumas and the origin of traumas is not really in ourselves. That might be in our parents or peers and all these things. And trauma is not really what happens to you, but it's what happens inside of you. This is what Gabor Mate says, and I think he's absolutely right about this. And to me, to become the authentic self, I think there is lack of authenticity in our world right now. We could be more authentic. We kind of, everyone feels probably that, you know, when you meet someone who comes across fake, or we see fake stuff or whatever, fake stories or products, like, we miss authenticity. It's in our hearts. You know, we wanna, you know, feel authentic. And actually, some of the most likable people are vulnerable. Like, they're actually able to tell, you know, about their hardship and tell a really touching story and be honest with themselves. And this kind of honesty and authenticity is rare in our world, which is actually demanding us to show up as our strongest.
Yeah,
we are schooled for that.
But it's a thin line because
you were talking about narcissism in your talk, and yeah, sometimes people and maybe myself, because I'm sharing all the time my story, talking with people, so there is my vulnerability and my real essence and my authentic self, but that's maybe mixed with a kind of narcissism. Yeah. Always.
I mean, when it comes to developing as a human being, we have mm-hmm. mirror cells. We yeah. mirror others. Exactly. We yeah. copy, we imitate. Yeah. This is one way through which we develop ourselves as we become individualized from our parents and we mm-hmm. separate from that symbiotic relationship. We become an individual. We start to imitate and copy others, you know, friends, idols, musicians, you know, podcasters, yeah. social media influencers, whatever. And maybe you are imitating Joe Rogan. Maybe you kind of are, you know, someone who is wanting to be Joe Rogan.
Well, yeah, okay.
Just
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
many entrepreneurs want to be like Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg.
But is that a bad thing? It's
yeah, that's a very good question. Like in the end...
like a role model can help you to...
I mean, we don't develop in isolation. We develop in interaction with others, and this interactive part is key for culture. It is for bonding. It is for tribalism. It holds us together. Imagine a tribal society. I mean, they're all reflections of each other. And in today's society, you know, we are also reflections of each other. But the thing is that some people don't feel enough, you know.
No.
You want to be Joe Rogan. One day when you wake up as Joe Rogan, you realize that that's not enough. I want to be Elon Musk next. So it might become pathological, meaning that it starts to hurt you and yeah. the people around you, this like lack of self-worth yeah. that is inside, that nothing feels enough. There is one pretty famous life coach, personal development coach in the country where I come from.
Finland,
and
yeah.
he portrayed, you know, this idealized version of himself to his audience. And he did all the ice baths and he did all the bread work and woke up early and had all the butter coffees and did, you know, all these biohacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the opportunity to stay at his place for a few weeks. And I saw what it's really all about. That guy didn't sleep. Like, he had like insomnia, sleep problems.
Wow.
And he was famous for waking up early and having coffee.
Yeah.
So the truth was, he didn't sleep and wake up at 5 a.m. to make the coffee. He actually didn't sleep at all. And the fact that he was awake, he decided to make a social media post. Hey, you know, it's 5 a.m. You
yeah,
know,
just rise
and shine. It's time to run after your dreams. And then he would, you know, make posts like, okay, you need to educate yourself all the time, right? So he would like just sit in the sofa and watch television and drink beer. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to make a post now. So he takes a book out of the bookshelf,
oh, wow.
browse it, finds a page, makes a post. Yeah, every day you should read a book. You know, I read one book per day. He would post that online.
That's pathetic.
And that dude, like, he actually, like, completely collapsed. Like, he went into a cycle for half a year where he couldn't sleep. Like, he was, like, he had, like, chronic fatigue, all these things. His cure was to tell the truth to his audience. So he made a very authentic post to his followers that actually don't follow me. Like, I can't keep up, you know, the character I created. We all have, you know, these kind of weaknesses and insecurities. Yeah. And I know many of you like think me as a role model, but you don't want to be me. And that's the same.
But then again, it's like an hero's journey. It's still a yeah. hero's journey, because even this bad part
exactly.
is a good part.
Exactly. Even though, like, he's kind of like Elon Musk when a child in the audience asks, like, how can I be like Elon
yeah,
Musk?
Yeah.
Elon Musk tells, like, you don't want to be me. The moment when you become authentic and you show vulnerability, he actually became a better
yeah.
personal development and life coach.
Yeah.
He became more respected
yeah.
because people saw authenticity, weakness, vulnerability in him, and he finally came out. You know, it might be that people kind of sensed already subconsciously that there's a little bit of fakeness in this guy.
Great story.
So I think we need these kind of paradigm shifts sometimes in our lives, where life just slaps you in the face that, wake up, dude, what you are doing is not right, and
yeah.
it's not you.
You were talking about different neurotic strategies. Which one is yours? Submission, aggression, detachment?
Well, I'm definitely now comes the narrative self. Okay, I tell a story of my life. So I've been an entrepreneur since I was 16.
Yeah.
So I've been trained by that environment to be assertive, to be goal-driven.
Yeah.
To
started a website company after university of art and design, where you were
persuade
like the
people.
Guy.
I'm a pretty good salesman. My father was also a salesman. So I can find ways to convince. And I would say like I'm a bit more assertive personal. So I'm maybe more aggressive. And the thing about like the one who is submissive is actually aggressive inside. The one who is aggressive is actually submissive inside, which is quite interesting. Like there's a
so you had this like maybe the aggression strategy was hosting people was well
and I basically burned myself out with it. I consumed myself because I was so driven. Like many entrepreneurs, they just burn themselves out.
Go,
you know,
go,
get things done and compromise your own well-being.
Yeah.
Sometimes even you have to compromise other people's well-being because some stuff just needs to get done. Companies actually exert aspects of psychopathy. Organizations.
Yeah.
So if we move from individuals to organizations, organizations, if they would be diagnosed for a mental illness, an organization shows up characteristics of psychopathy. Yeah. So think of let's say a chemical company that pollutes the environment. The leadership might actually be very environmentally friendly and they really want to drive that, but the company ends up polluting the environment. Yeah. And often the people who are in charge, they do it because they believe it's in the interest of the company or the company wouldn't survive unless we do this. It's the same story for wars also. Why soldiers follow orders. They believe, you know, it's the it's my duty or it's in the interest of the country. And it starts to, like this collective action starts to exhibit these kind of psychopathic traits of no compassion at all.
No, but I think you're right. All the big bosses, all the guys we know and even the guys we don't know, they have this kind of disorder.
Yeah.
Narcissism or whatever, but that's what's driving the world in a certain way.
I remember I was consulting one company that is in the soft drink business.
Mm-hmm.
They were basically selling sugar, liquid sugar to people.
Yeah.
And the marketing people who came up with all the cunning plans how to sell it, they wouldn't touch their own drinks.
No.
They were, you know, health conscious. Exercise-driven.
That's the whole
like social
dilemma thing as
they
well.
They were just getting money
they know
for
how
doing
bad it
stuff
is,
which was like just Darth Vader, you know, material.
But let's get to your story because it's very interesting. So you were this like business guy, inspirator, maybe a guru. And then you got an ulcer. There's something with your stomach.
Yeah.
What was the moment? Because you got medication and it didn't work, or it came back, and you thought, no, I'm not going to use this all my life. What? So you started to Google.
Yeah, I started to figure out like how I can fix my problem. But let's go back to why I got ill. So often disease manifests when you suppress something.
Exactly.
So if you suppress your emotions, you're more likely to have autoimmune disease.
The body keeps the score.
Exactly. That's the story here. If you act out strongly all your life, like you're not submitting, but you're the aggressive type, you're more likely to have hypertension and get heart attack. You have actually strong immunity because that actually strengthens your immunity. It's like aggressiveness and assertiveness.
Mm.
If you're a submissive person, you're more likely to have weak immunity and you get sick easily and you have autoimmune disease. You're kind of, if you hold these things inside of you and you don't deal with your problems, your body will, you know, express those. So that's how I got ill. And in the end, now that I think about it, most of my interventions were to go back into recognizing my problem and also coming up with behaviors that were the opposite of what I would normally do.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, previously I wouldn't sleep. I would just like work late night and make PowerPoint presentations. I would just go to sleep, even if it feels like the world is collapsing, and sleep well. So I just made sure I'm doing the opposite of what I was doing. And also I was like very honest about the fact that I didn't really enjoy partly what I was doing. And that's the thing, you know, many people, they just do some stuff and deeply inside they don't actually enjoy doing it. It's a bit, you know, life is suffering and it's hard. It's hard, like Jordan Peterson would say. You better do something with your life. If you don't do something with your life, life will come after you. Was that good imitation?
Yeah, pretty good actually.
Yeah, that's what happened to me.
And then, well, you started to become this biohacker.
Yeah.
Do you love the name?
Biohacking. It's controversial.
Yeah, exactly.
But of course, I need to tell a story, and like I'm kind of masking, you know, the problems of this whole term and the industry by saying that there is actually something good in the bad of it. But biohacking comes to like layman across as almost aggressive. You kind of hack into something, you know, into a computer system or into the body.
Yeah.
And it almost comes across as terrorism for some people. Like they might think about, you know, modifying organisms in the lab or something like this. But in the end, biohacking is an umbrella term that encompasses all kinds of aspects of using data to optimize, you know, different systems. And it's a holistic term. You could say like holistic health practices are part of biohacking, but also medical practices are part of biohacking. It's when it's like driven by a hypothesis you're into biohacking, like you have a very clear idea why you're doing what you do. The idea of hacking comes actually, it's not a negative term. It's Pekka Himanen, who is a philosopher, he wrote a book called Hacker Ethic. And in Hacker Ethic, he describes how hackers are actually enthusiastic about the topic. So it's not a duty. It's not like, you know, some kind of duty like work. But it's actually a passion. You love it.
Yeah.
And you can be an astronomy hacker. You can be a geography hacker. You can be a...
It's like passion from inside.
Yeah. You can be a computer hacker. Yeah. You can be a... So cracking is the act of like entering a system like maliciously. Cracking.
Yeah.
But media took hacking as a term and transformed it into a negative term.
Yeah.
But I believe like terms like optimal human performance or health optimization or just better living through science, technology and nature is a better description of what the kind of biohacking we look after is all about. It's understanding that we are never complete. You can never achieve an optimal or ideal. It's the pursuit of it.
It's but it's in a way of it's already good enough, because that's the whole
correct
point.
Yeah.
That a lot of people, and I think you know them all.
Yeah.
It's becoming like a church and with
indeed
rules, and then there's more stress, and then well,
there is the Pareto's law, Italian mathematician, like the 20-80 rule, that 20% of work is done by 80% of people, and 20% of people own the wealth of the world, and so on. Like this 20-80 rule shows up everywhere. So the question is, like, how do you figure out what is the 20% that will result in 80% improvement in your life? But the problem is that people actually spend their time on the 80% that only produce 20%, and to live optimally in terms of health or performance, like, it's not about working 8 hours or 12 hours or 16 hours. It's not a competition on that front at all. It's not about efficiency. It's about effectiveness. So instead of just doing things right, you do the right things. If you do the right things, you don't need to work that much. And as a leader, I had to learn to let go a little bit of my ego that I'm the best one to do something. I need to delegate, and I need to tolerate weakness in others. I need to tolerate the fact that I feel I could do this better.
Yeah.
And this has been very humbling for me. And I learned that actually this makes things work better in the end. That my idealization of my own efforts and abilities is actually wrong. In the beginning, it might be like, you know, someone else might do this podcast, you know, interview even a bit more poorly. But they might actually develop to become better than you.
Yeah.
And maybe you just want to run the marketing for this whole thing. Who knows? Like, how do you let go of the identity that you created yourself, that you're Joe Rogan? You don't need to be Joe Rogan. You can actually create a podcast where every episode there is a different person who is just the right one to interview the guest, is doing the work.
Yeah.
But in the end, your followers are like identifying this podcast with you. So they're expecting you to be behind the microphone. So you become basically the slave of your audience, what they expect this to be, right? So and if you have guests that are not interesting or are not in line with what you have done in the history, they will let you know. And this is called the looking glass effect.
Yeah.
You are extremely conscious about the fact that other people are watching this or listening to this. And you will modify your behavior to basically attend to their needs.
Yeah.
And those needs might not be your needs at all, or your interests.
Of je nou ervaring hebt of niet, samen mediteren is krachtig en mooi. En hoe fijn is het om verschillende smaken te proeven? Kijk, de basis is gewaar zijn van je gedachten. Dat is mediteren. Maar dat kan je op verschillende manieren doen. Dat kan je de oude manier met mantra's en toestanden, zoals Swami het gaat doen. Of je gaat juist een beetje, zoals Merel Teunis en Christine Beijnen van Cosmic Life het gaan doen. Het op de manifestatie manier doen. Wat hebben we nog meer? We hebben de Transcendente Reis van Marieke van Meijeren. We hebben de Oerdoksen meditatie. Dat zal vooral een hoop stilte zijn, denk ik. Met Jan Geurts. Mike Upelacik, de man van de Meditations app. Meditation Moments, waar hij zelf natuurlijk die fijne stem heeft. Maar ook Faya Laurens, die is erbij. Robert Bridgman. We hebben ademexperts, Koen de Jong en op zijn handpan natuurlijk Casper van der Meulen. Jesse Jazz is erbij, Roy Martina, Hielke Bonnema. Ik ga ze toch echt niet weer allemaal opnoemen. Maar ik nodig je uit om erbij te zijn. Van 1 tot 10 mei, meditatie, helemaal gratis. Geef je op via koekeroe.nl/meditatie.
Yeah, well, I'm...
We can blind to this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope I stay sharp. A lot of questions. First, what is the use of the ego, according to you?
Well, ego. Some people say that there is a healthy ego. It's possible to have a healthy ego, or you can have a malignant ego. The ego is not your true self.
No.
The ego is a representation or a reflection of your life experiences and the narratives and all these things, that the kind of story you tell about yourself. And to me, what is a healthy ego is that you don't take yourself too seriously, but you take yourself seriously enough.
Yeah. And but I think, is there a use? Because I'm really into the Course of Miracles now. I don't know if you know it. And then it's all like the ego is about fear, and it's so just stay to your true essence, and then you have the power of love, actually.
Yeah, it's really about understanding that the self is a reflection of interactions with others, and you can't exist. You will actually die without others, or the ecosystem, or the plants, or the animals, or other human beings. You need them. But very easily, we become separated from others. We create a little bit of distance, even. We create a little bit of competition. We need to, as society, we need to move from competition to collaboration, how we get things done, to understand that we are actually a global village, a tribe, a global tribe that needs to work together to make sure that we don't destroy this planet. Because it's a kind of a malignant ego, does things for itself only.
Yeah.
Doesn't think about others. It's only about your success. Or it extends only to your family or only to your company.
But how do you
as
work
long as
with
my,
that?
My people are good. It's about understanding that we are all the same under the sun. And it's a hard concept in the end, because there's a tribal aspect that we compete with nation states and borders and of resources and all that. And there's this whole separation of us and the others. But to understand that the others are us as well, to understand that every human being is actually you, that we are kind of part of the same universe, and we are experiencing it from different point of view, just like a hologram.
Is that
piece.
What spirituality is for you?
In the end, like if you think about what enlightenment is, like what is the goal of enlightenment, the kind of teachings very patiently start from the point of view that you let go of material possessions, you focus on the moment, become utterly aware of the present moment and about the illusions, that what you experience is a reflection, that you are just not experiencing things directly, but it's a reflection of it, and there's a divine behind it, there's a veil. in front of which you are like minuscule, but at the same time when you feel like you have nothing, you have everything.
Yeah.
And this is the like universal consciousness in a way, like we are all part of the larger whole. And it's easy to describe, right? But to actually come to the realization, to have this moment where you are like, oh my God, this is actually true. It's kind of like, it's easy to say that, hey, stay in the moment. But most of our pain and suffering comes from the fact that we actually live in the past, or we are anxious about
worrying,
the future,
yeah,
and worry, and we are afraid of death. But if you accept your demise, you accept death, you accept the fact that everything you see right now is a reflection, it's not real. Only what is real is your experience of it, but that's also like a synthesis.
Yeah.
It's a point of view. And in the end, everything you love, everything you have will transform. You will not lose it, but it will transform in a way. You will also transform into something else. And that's where we get into religion, like what happens then, like, maybe we can be very possessive and narcissistic about, you know, our souls and like true aspects of ourselves, that it somehow like survives, you know, the violent demise of your physical body.
Yeah.
I think that's also like a narcissistic coping mechanism, actually, to believe that you will live forever in a way, because you have no proof, right? You have to take a point of view, you have to believe. So it's actually a way of like soothing yourself. Religion is a way of soothing yourself in face of unknowns. When shit happens, people turn into religion,
mm-hmm,
because they have no way to describe it. So they rely on authority.
Yeah, to grab.
And the authority, it can be a guru.
Yeah.
But it can also be, you know, something we describe as God or Father or,
yeah,
you know, the Great Spirit or whatever. But what if all of that is an illusion? It's only a story you tell to yourself to suit yourself to deal with the fact that you will die, and even this moment you don't have proof that this is real.
No,
this might be a simulation. You might be someone's like cunning dream, someone's computer program. And this is an interesting idea also. And that also is a religious idea. That is also
exactly
a way of like explaining away the fact that you don't know.
That's how we started. Isn't it all like a narrative?
Yes. Yeah. It is all.
And how do you train yourself? I'm guessing you're training that yourself as well. To stay in a moment.
All of the need to stay in the moment and stay in the body came from the coping mechanisms to deal with adversary, psychological, physical pain or trauma. So you can actually escape, you know, the hardships and the pain of even of the body by going into meditation, by mm-hmm. going into your body and like meditation and relaxing into it and into the breath. And this practice of focus and attention is very helpful. So one person once said to me, like, if your life is hard and you're anxious and depressed, shorten the time frame. If you feel like you're anxious about 1 year, just shorten the time frame. Okay, one quarter. Feels better? No? Okay, 1 month. Feels better? No? Okay, 1 week. Is this week fine? No? Okay, 1 day. Is today fine day? Actually, it's pretty fine day. But there were some problems. Okay, 1 hour. Okay, this very moment.
The next second,
fine?
There isn't a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the end, if you like follow that like thought, you realize that your suffering is your own making.
Yeah.
You made it up. You invented it. And you can also invent another perspective, which is happiness, contentness, with whatever situation. And this comes from the research of Holocaust victims also. They thought that Holocaust victims have like very sensitive nervous systems and they are like traumatized by mm-hmm. the experiences. It's true for some of them, but the ones who have been able to overcome that and not commit suicide, they are actually completely fine with what happened.
Yeah.
It has become a part of them. They integrated that into their story, into their narrative. They tell themselves that I am this because of all that stuff that happened, and actually it was good for me. Can you imagine?
Yeah. It's well, Viktor Frankl.
I just shared this morning my story of becoming a biohacker
mm-hmm.
from one perspective, my physical trauma, my mental problems, whatever that led me to those physical problems, were a good thing because it created me right here. So in the end, recognizing your shadow and loving your shadow and understanding that might be the best ever thing that happened to you. This is the truth also for psychedelics. Like, it's not the, you know, grandiose, narcissistic, you know, beautiful, most amazing trip and experience ever that is the most useful to you, but it's the one that kicks your ass, the one that slaps you in the face, shows you things that you don't want to see, that you feel like you actually died and you were reborn. And from that experience, you can, you know, approach things with more consciousness and with more just empathy, yeah, and also towards yourself. And it's the integration then that waits you.
Exactly, because otherwise you will have to use it every week, yeah, and then it's more like, well, like a god again.
Yeah. And here comes the dark side of psychedelics. You can also become a grandiose psychedelic narcissist.
Exactly.
Psychedelics can become like some kind of sport that you just like perform ceremonies. Mm-hmm. You know, you go from one ceremony to another as if it is like some collectibles.
And then you feel the bliss and you know, yeah, it all. And
yeah, and this fact that you know it all, you might develop like this spiritual grandiosism or narcissism where you believe that I'm above others. I've seen behind the veil.
Yeah.
Like other people are below me in some way or operating on a lower frequency because I'm now elevated into higher frequency and I see things. And actually the experience that you might experience in this kind of boundary dissolution space is that you start to believe you are God.
Yeah.
That there's a God within me. You are Shiva, you are Buddha, you are all of these. And this is a dangerous path. This is why it's very important that these things and tools are used with therapists and with, that could be a shaman.
Yeah.
But I believe also modern psychotherapeuts and psychologists can develop, and trauma therapists and therapists in general can develop protocols that are useful. But if you use these things alone, on your own, to amplify your spiritual or psychedelic narcissism, you actually become more of an asshole. And when there is all this research that shows, yeah, it treats depression, you know, and all that, or it was most important experience of your life, that might be just the beginning of becoming more of an asshole. So in the end, you know, there's always a dark side to the light.
And how do you do it yourself? Because this is the paradox thing that we are talking about this. You are standing at a stage. Well, we just walked here at the summit and I saw people like, oh my God, it's Timo. Which is a compliment for you, and you give inspiration.
Thank you. That actually soothes my my traumas, and it actually gives me narcissistic supply. I actually created this conference as a supply for my narcissistic needs. And I was actually thinking about, I've done, you know, dark factor tests, and actually my narcissism is extremely low, and I'm often, you know, the person who gives more than takes. Yeah. But even I give my health for this to happen, you know. One of the unhealthiest thing ever is to organize a health conference. Don't try it.
That's a good one.
You will kill yourself. So, but in a way, this can be also a narcissistic supply. And I have to be very, when I walk there, everyone is like stopping me, like, great conference, awesome, you know, what you've done is amazing. Like, and it's a hard work to just stay humble and say, I didn't do this. It's a collaborative effort, like, I wouldn't be able to do this. It's because of all these great individuals I met. I'm just like, you know, in the center of the whirlpool or the hurricane trying to assemble an aircraft while it's landing. It's hard work, but in the end, I wouldn't be able to do this without others. We need others. But in the end, you know, people want to identify me as the leader of this thing and give me all the credit.
But do you have a tool to stay on the ground and not to fly with all the compliments?
I just try to, you know, demote myself from this position of I've actually really, really hard tried to make sure I'm not speaking on stage over the years, but every year it's just like one speaker cancels or whatever, and I end up doing it. But I want to give the stage to others.
No, sorry. you like it. It's not that you are standing there like, oh, I have to do this and I don't want it. It's like a passion.
It's a passion. I give 100 talks a year to different events and audiences, and when I create this, I want to create a conference where I actually want to hang out And many conferences are actually not giving me much. You know, I go there, I give presentation, people clap, great talk. I don't learn a thing, but I have to travel. I have to, you know, use all that stress, prepare things. So I try to change things. I get some reflection. I want to go places where I actually learn. So this is a place where I can kind of, in a self-induced, self-centered way, I can build a community that attracts interesting characters. I just like to see what chemistry comes out of it, like what comes from those molecular reactions of different people. And this is a place where I want to hang out. So with that, you know, I want to thank you for this interview, because I really want to go and enjoy this. Okay. Although, you know, this broadcast is awesome, and this will give me narcissistic supply that other people hear and listen to me, and you're going to give me an audience, and it's going to grow my followers. And if you want to give me narcissistic supply, go and follow, you know, Biohacking Book on Instagram, Biohacker Summit, and also Tarina, TAR1NA. Those are my Instagram accounts. I will share you all these things that will help you to become a better version of yourself and more of a self-induced narcissist.
Can I ask two questions and then
all right, okay. Let's do it.
Do you think biohacking is sometimes just a placebo? Which is, well, it works, but...
It's a placebo and a nocebo as well. If a activity tracker tells you you didn't sleep well and there's some inaccuracies, like it can affect your performance even though you just slept fine. And actually, there is this whole idea of the more diagnosis, the more analysis you do of yourself, you find, like everyone has a disease.
Yeah.
You might have a tumor, cancer, you know, blood pressure issues, inflammation, whatever. And the fact is that most of those things won't kill you. Like, you might live long with the tumors and not die. And the interesting thing that comes from, like, studies on surgeries and so on, like, sometimes the best thing to do is not to operate. Really.
And to just let it happen?
Yeah, because the operation might actually lead to side effects and problems and, like, loops of, like, drug treatments and all that. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do. There's serious conditions. Statistically, it makes sense. But the fact is that sometimes we overdiagnose and overtreat. And this is the problem with biohacking. You might overdiagnose and overtreat yourself to the point where you don't know all the unknowns and variables, and you just screw up one thing.
Oh, that's
and
great.
You're dead.
Yeah.
And maybe that's your destiny then.
Then it's, Do you have like a morning ritual?
Morning ritual. Oh, rituals is interesting, because we want to emulate others. We want to learn their rituals. We want to learn their, what is your morning ritual? What is your evening ritual? You know what? Whatever story I tell you now, I'm not going to do it.
Great.
You ask anyone who tells their rituals or morning routines, trust me, they're not doing it. They might do it occasionally. They might do a little bit of it. If they actually do it, if they actually do exactly that sequence, I believe, you know, they have a pathological problem. They need to go see a therapist.
Oh, I love you, Timo. This is the last one. What do you think? What do you think of death? What are you afraid of it, or what do you think will happen?
Happen with what?
With you, or like
with
the flesh and the.
Yeah, I mean, I'm somebody becoming nobody. This is my life's mission right now. I think that's kind of a humble thing. If you can like keep in your mind when you look at yourself in the morning, I'm somebody becoming nobody. If you can execute on that well, you're on your way to enlightenment, I believe. But still, that is a story you tell yourself, which is a narcissistic goal. You want to become enlightened.
It's the trap again.
So that's the last.
But how do you want to be remembered? No,
that's the trap. Many teachers will tell you, you know, spiritual teachers will tell you that's the trap of like believing that you're on your way to enlightenment. You might never be.
Yeah. How do you want to be remembered?
Oh, yeah. Like Steve Jobs said, I'm here to make a dent in the universe. And I want statues built for me. And I want my face to be engraved in the products that I sell. Actually, it would be awesome if my name was on all the products. No, not really. In the end, like, you leave a mark in people. And one thing I learned by observing, you know, spiritual people is that they bless everyone. You never know, like, even a homeless person what you might be able to contributing yeah. to them if you like are compassionate and you bless them in some way on your path, because they are all part of your path, you want it or not as well. It's hard. It's very hard to tolerate, but tolerance and compassion and authenticity is the thing that is missing from this world, and we need it more. And if you can, you know, take your own role in making sure as collective, you know, we are helping this planet to elevate, to transcend all its collective traumas, to become, you know, worthy of carrying the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Prometheus carried the fire of humanity. You know, we all have to become the carriers of that fire. And, you know, it's hard work, and you might burn like Icarus going too close to the sun with all your narcissistic bullshit. Aho.
Thank you. Aho. Thank you so much, Timo. I love to speak to you someday longer about mastering resilience and all the great things you're doing. But this was...
My pleasure.
This was inspirational.
Be well, my friend.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Dit was Koekeroe. Tot de volgende. Zo'n groet. Hoi.
Ja, voordat je weggaat, je hebt het hele gesprek uitgezeten. Heb je jezelf al aangemeld? Zo ja, top. Dan heb ik er zin in. En dan voelen we elkaar 1 mei. Zo niet. Nou, trouwens, het is iets eerder dan 1 mei, bedenk ik me nu. Want we hebben nog een inkomweekend. Afijn, dat wordt allemaal duidelijk. Als je denkt, waar gaat dit over? Meditatie. Van 1 tot 10 mei. Elke ochtend en elke avond samen even inchecken. En samen even zitten. Jij thuis, ik thuis. En fantastische experts die ons begeleiden. Het zijn er meer dan 20 en ik ga ze echt niet weer allemaal opnoemen. Oh, er wordt gebeld. Maar meld je aan. Dat is eigenlijk wat ik nog even wilde zeggen. Koekeroe.nl/meditatie